This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania.
There has been an issue in some cities of having enough ventilators for those people who need to use them battling coronavirus. But a new idea was brought up as part of an opinion piece published in the Wall Street Journal recently. Instead of bringing the ventilators to the patients, how about bringing the patients to the ventilators? The idea, called Operation COVID Airlift, was born out of an article co-authored by Kevin Volpe. He is director of the Center for Health Incentives and Behavioral Economics, as well as professor of medical ethics and health policy and professor of healthcare management at the University of Pennsylvania and at the Wharton School. And he joins us right now. Kevin, thanks for your time today.
Dan, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Great to have you back on the show. So give us a sense of what you're talking about here in terms of maybe moving patients around instead of moving the ventilators around. How would that all play out?
Sure. Well, the basic concept is pretty simple. I think we've all followed the press accounts carefully of the situation in New York City and what has also happened in other parts of the world, like Northern Italy, where certain geographic areas get a very high prevalence of cases, and it's frankly just too much for a health system to be able to appropriately care for. So there's been a lot of appeals to send more ventilators to New York City, but the problem with that is that there's not enough places to put them where they can be properly run, and there aren't enough people to run them because each ventilator, of course, doesn't run by itself. You need skilled respiratory technicians, and you need skilled physicians, and you need skilled nurses, and they're all in short supply. So the idea that my colleague Mitchell Blutt and I came up with was this notion of why don't we at least in part consider moving patients from areas where there's not enough capacity to areas where there's plenty of capacity. So let's say within a two-hour radius of New York City, there are lots of places, particularly in northern New England, where there are not many COVID patients, and where you have skilled doctors, skilled nurses, available hospital beds, available respirators, and rather than perhaps being treated in a field hospital in Central Park, you'd probably be better off being treated in a real facility with clinicians who aren't as overstressed if you can safely transport some of the patients from one place to the other.
Right, and that would be using basically existing infrastructure like life flight helicopters and maybe some planes as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, there's a long history of the medical profession safely triaging and transferring patients from one facility to another. Typically, it involves patients being transferred from suburban or rural hospitals with less capabilities to academic centers in places like New York, and in essence, the same infrastructure could be used in reverse to move some of those patients to less densely populated areas. I think another idea which is worth thinking about is there a role here for the military? The military, of course, sure, has a lot of experience transporting critically ill people and doing it safely, and some of their capabilities could be repurposed in this moment of crisis.
So I'm sure there are probably, and you brought some of these up in the piece, a bunch of what ifs, and let's go through a couple of them if we can. Obviously, the concern I think of some people might be you're talking about somebody who is already sick, and then you're trying to move them to another facility.
Yeah, well, I think there are two things I might say about that. One is to carefully consider who is sick but not critically ill, but highly likely to become critically ill. And so we know something about the disease at this point, which allows us to predict, you know, who are the kinds of patients who are more likely to become critically ill based on how they initially present. Those patients could be safely triaged. Or you may have patients who are ready on ventilators, but who are relatively stable. Now, that may sound like a strange thing to say, but there's a wide range of levels of acuity of patients on ventilators, some who are more stable than others. And you could think about triaging some of the more stable patients who are already safely on ventilators and moving them elsewhere.
And as you said before, you would try and use facilities in other locations that have the vacancy basically in play right now. They have the beds available, but I guess in part of that also you have to make sure that you are still leaving some space for the local people that may need those beds, whether it be for coronavirus or some other ailment.
Yeah. No, that's a critical issue, Dan, and there's a number of different projection models that have been developed to help health systems and states and cities plan for the future of the epidemic. And in essence, what these projection models do is they look at the existing caseload, the rate of spread, what sort of social distancing measures are in place in different geographic areas, and they can give a reasonable sense of what might be expected over the next 2 to 3 weeks within a particular geographic area. And this is absolutely critical because the last thing you'd want to do is, for example, transfer patients from New York to some other area which is going to also run out of hospital beds. That would not be good for anybody. You want to transfer patients to areas which have relatively few cases now and which reliable projection models would suggest are unlikely to have many more cases in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And the next 2 to 3 weeks is important because we're seeing, particularly for patients on ventilators, they have pretty long lengths of stay. This is not like some other illnesses where people might be on a ventilator for 2 to 3 days. A lot of times when people are on a ventilator, they're on a ventilator with COVID for 10 to 14 days.
We're joined by Kevin Volpe of the University of Pennsylvania and the Wharton School, talking about an opinion piece that he was part of in the Wall Street Journal, talking about maybe working to bring patients to ventilators instead of bringing the ventilators to the patients. The other part is the families. And obviously, you already have rules in place where families are not allowed to see certain patients because of the virus at this point. I would imagine there would be an even greater concern if you're talking about moving somebody away from a particular area where they are near their family to another region, which may be farther away. Obviously, even with the distancing you would have in play there, you're adding another layer to this.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to say, Dan, none of this is ideal. And none of this would be something which in a first best world we'd be contemplating. Obviously, it's important for families to be able to be near their loved ones, particularly when they're critically ill or at risk of being critically ill. It is true that many, perhaps most health systems at this point have adopted rules where there are no visitation rights, particularly for COVID patients, because of the obvious concerns about further transmission and spread. So visits have been basically eliminated. That said, it's one thing to know that my loved one is down the street at the local hospital. It's another to have them air flighted to Buffalo, New York, or Concord, New Hampshire, or somewhere like that, and feel like they're really far away. So, you know, I think the trade-off we have to think about here is while that physical proximity, even if you can't visit someone, is important. There are these real trade-offs that there's a risk that there won't be enough ventilators and that people will die because of that. And so we have to weigh all this carefully in considering this as a potential part of the solution.
But Kevin, I think what this also does is it really opens up the door to rethink processes within the health sector of how you do things. And I think that's a question that is being asked in a lot of areas right now because of obviously the impact that coronavirus has had, but maybe the belief that we need to be better prepared for the next whatever comes down the block.
Well, that's an absolutely critical issue. And my colleague in operations management, Christian Turvish, and I have been doing a fair amount of thinking about that in the context of other areas like personal protective equipment. I think a lot of historically what's been done is basically just-in-time supply chains, which are intended to minimize costs. And in normal situations where you have relatively constant demand, that's totally fine. But here you have this unprecedented surge in demand combined with these constraints in the supply chain. and suddenly there's no buffering in the system available to meet this need. And so I think that's one issue to think about. We need somebody to be doing that. In many countries, it's been the government, where the government has a large national stockpile, which can be then allocated to different areas based on what they need. It appears that our national stockpile has already been exhausted, and there just aren't, there isn't enough ventilators. There's not enough personal protective equipment for healthcare workers. So it doesn't seem like we're sufficiently prepared for a 50-state type pandemic situation. I think another issue is to think about is the role of the federal government versus the marketplace in allocating scarce resources. So we have a situation here where, in essence, individual health systems, cities, states are bidding against each other to try to procure scarce resources.
Yeah.
And we don't have a good system for procuring these as a country and then allocating them where they're most needed.
Kevin, thanks very much for your time. Great insight. And again, for those people that would like to read the piece that Kevin was part of, you can go to the Wall Street Journal website. And if you put in Operation COVID Airlift, the article will pop up for you there. Kevin, be safe and look forward to seeing you on campus at some point.
Thanks so much, Dan. And let me just give a quick shout out again to my co-author, Mitchell Blutt, who came up with many of the ideas in this piece.
Kevin Volpe joining us here on the show as we talk about the coronavirus impact. Again, that article, Operation COVID Airlift, on the Wall Street Journal website.
To keep engaged with Wharton Business Daily and other Wharton School shows, visit businessradio.wharton.upenn.edu.